Hi guys, no we're not gone, we're still about. Welcome to DGen BJJ with me, Irish Mike, and my co-host
Ken.
How are you getting on, Ken? It's been a long time.
Not too bad, mate, yeah. How are you getting on? It's been a while. How long? It's
fucking 5 weeks, I think. Could be six. So it's six episodes missed, so I think people are kind of wondering like what's been going on. There was a lot of people saying whatever, but I put a couple of posts up on Instagram saying that obviously things were going on. We were due to have an episode and then kind of things fell apart again. It was just one of these things where life gets in the way and injuries and stuff like that. So like I hadn't trained until last week for 4 weeks. A back injury, and I actually same time as that work. I'd no work. I don't know if I said that in the last one. But
yeah, we were talking about that because you were trying all the new fads, eh?
Yeah,
because you had no work. You were trying fasting and I can't remember what else. What did you try? It was coffee enemas. I remember you're a big fan of a coffee enema.
I was shoving shit up my hole. I was telling you that in private. That had to do with. But anyway, yeah, bring it down straight away. But so then it was just like finally got a job and been pulled from pillar to post. I'm not home till fucking even like today, 7 o'clock most evenings now. So getting the train has been a bit hard and up at 6 o'clock in the morning. Fucking, it's just life getting in the way. Like, so as jiu-jitsu, as podcasting, we're not getting paid for it. It's a hobby at the minute. So unfortunately, the listeners that enjoy our content are going to have to feel the brunt till maybe Christmas, where we'll be going bi-weekly. And the idea is, as we were saying, if we go bi-weekly, we're actually going to still record as much if we can. And by the after Christmas period, we'll go back to weekly, but we'll actually have some extra stuff in. Yeah, we'll see. Like, we'll adjust it again after Christmas and see what way we're standing. Yourself anyway, because
I'd probably say, yeah, bi-weekly is going to be the goal.
Yeah.
If it wavers, you know, it's going to be a bit more sporadic. We're going to try and have more guests on as well, because we feel like that's the kind of better received content.
Now to Christmas, we're going to aim to have every episode is going to be a guest.
Be a guest episode. And to be honest, yeah, like we'll do what we can in person, but just because of the ease of it, some of them are going to have to be over Skype. And as you'll find out in the next Skype interview, obviously there will be another bunch of teething issues with the sound, which we'll talk about later, because I know that there's been some comments on that. But yeah, you know, we'll try and have guests on every couple of weeks as, we're running out of stuff to say. Let's be honest, Mike.
I don't think so. I think it's, I wasn't training because I was injured, and you're obviously injured now as well, like with a bit of time on that. So we're both not training, and jiu-jitsu it's a jiu-jitsu comedy podcast. So most of our content is coming through us weaving our web through our lives with jiu-jitsu.
Yeah, trying to talk about training, bit of banter from the mats, and obviously going round and being able to cross train and stuff is what gives us a bit more content and stuff. So that's why, you know, there's going to be a reliance on guests. How is the back, mate? Are you back training?
Yeah, so like obviously you're aware of it, but so the back was sore for 4 weeks, and Dom had put up a post on the Mat House page saying whatever no-gi tonight, and it's one of me and Aidan, a lot of people that follow the page, you'll know it. Like, it's we're doing no-gi and I have his back taken, and we're laughing away, like having the crack. And I just sent a message saying, like, I'm still training, like I'll be back shortly, my back is at me. And straight away he just hit me back, goes, what's wrong with your back? What happened? As if like, did it happen in Matt House, you know? And I was like, No, it didn't happen. Well, I don't know how it happened. And I'm like, I work in construction as well.
It's so a life of wear and tear, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Like, and he goes, where's it hurting? And I told him, come in tonight and I'll show you how to fix it. And I was like, all right, sound. I came in and he gave me like 8 exercises or 10 exercises that involved not putting strain on the hinge of the back, but like move everything else. And I'm supposed to do it one day, miss a day, next day, miss a day. By the fourth day, like 50% better. By the sixth day, I actually didn't do the stretches in line, but by the eighth day when I done back in, like I was back to normal. I'm actually even better now than I was.
It's phenomenal.
It's like, why go to physio? Like, yeah, I was going to physio.
You paid money for the physio, paid money for the chiropractor, they do jack shit. You went and saw your local black belt.
Yeah, and like the funny thing is, like, my monthly subscription covered it, if you look at it that way. And like, if I have a jiu-jitsu injury again now, I'm just going straight to Dom. His head's going to be melted. And if he's listening to this, I did not tell everybody to text Dom if they have an injury.
No, but They might.
But they might. It's worth. I'd recommend it.
It's worth trying it out, eh? Worth trying it out. Yeah,
but so pick up Dan for that. And,
so you're back training then? You're back on the mats?
Yeah, and speaking of injuries. And
yeah, I was going to say you had a little trip to A&E, but it weren't. Call an ambulance. But not for me.
Yeah. Yeah. So, done. So obviously now with the timetable has changed, we've got advanced gi, then no gi, and then mixed level gi.
It's like 3-hour classes, right? Yeah. You've got advanced class, no gi, then yeah. Like an all levels class.
So I was like, on a Saturday I'd bite the triple, like that's nice, like, you know. But I said, look, I haven't been training so long. Back might be sore, I might feel a little bit of pain. I'll book the two first and just do that this week and a bit of rest. So yeah, grand, got the advance done, fine. A little bit stiff, but nothing like, you know, I said, I know Gee's coming now, be a bit more free, a bit more room to move. First round of sparring, is going against Kai, nice young fella. He's probably 77 kilos, I'm 88, maybe 72, I don't know, he's tall.
Yeah, I'd say he's similar weight to me, so he probably is 70.
Because he's tall, he carries
to 80, yeah.
But like he's very fit, like he does, I think he does Muay Thai and a bit of MMA and that as well. But so we were just rolling, nothing too, I was kind of, you know, just being heavy and fucking, you know, using a bit of pressure, like. But I kind of lazily knee cut as I was passing, like, and I will say I was being lazy, like, and I kind of just like fell through, do you know the way you just like fall through, like.
Yeah.
And he just goes whatever, and he was kind of holding the top of his hand, like his hand over his thumb, and he's going, "You broke my thumb," and I was like, "Fuck off, will ya?" Because he was just too cool about it, like he was still. Not, like, I suppose it was shock, you know. I couldn't read, like, by him. I was like, what are you talking about? And next thing he goes, no, you broke my fucking thumb. And I was like, oh, shit. And then I went up and went, oh, fuck. So I said, right, come on, let's go. I called down, like, as if, and Tom just goes, no, go to fucking A&E. And he's like, went to get a cool pack. And so I said, look, just go. So I said, look.
Yeah, that thumb looked gnarly, to be fair.
Oh, no, lads, I swear to God, I felt like no the biggest that dickhead was, ever. Like,
that was going to be injured, for sure.
But I said to him, I said, it's probably just dislocated. Do you want, like we could pull it if you want? Because he was kind of saying he was in pain, like, because I dislocated fingers, like, badly before, like, where it was, like, off the right-hand side, like, and I've just cracked it and pulled it back into place, like. And I was like, yeah, but probably don't want to do that because I kind of get little bits of arthritis in my small finger now where that happened, like, you know. But he went in anyway, long story short, and he got the gas, and it was just dislocated and not broken, thank God, so...
So I popped it back and
So his missus came pick him up
and everyone's happy.
Yeah, well, I don't think he's happy because he's out now for 4 weeks as well. They said he should rest it for 4 weeks.
Yeah,
but
how long? He'll strap it up and back on the mats within a couple of weeks.
I bet he's
already trained this week.
I mean, I don't know, but if it was me, yeah, probably would be the same. But
fair play to him, keeping his cool. Like, it's tough when you.
Yeah, he kind of got a little bit tick with me there at one stage because I said, come up and show me your bag. And he's like, I can't go up my fucking, you know. And I said, mate, I don't know what your fucking bags look like. Just come up with me and I'll show you. I said, I'm trying to help you. Like, I'll get you to that thing. I said, you know, and we got it. But look, in fairness, like, it was only small injuries. Thank God.
That's just one of those freak things that happens.
Yeah. And, like, I mean, it's like, as I said, if you're doing fucking that much jiu-jitsu going on. But I was just like, the gym is just injury riddled at the minute, like, so it's just fucking...
Yeah, it's been a bit of a spate of it. Now, like we're saying, I'm speaking of someone keeping their cool on the mat after an injury, I only wish I could have been so dignified when... for those of you that don't know, like, I know that most of the guys that will still be listening now are people that actually know us, but my shoulder went... I think last time we recorded would have been the last show that aired would have been the Friday before, innit?
Yeah, yeah.
So I was meant to be competing on the Saturday. And as you'd write it, the final round of sparring on a Tuesday night, which would have been my final round of sparring before the comp, obviously tapped too late and my shoulder went. It's one that I've injured previously as well, so I don't know whether it was already a little bit weak. You know, tough round and, yeah, just advice to anyone. Tap early, tap often. Yeah. I'm going to be like tapping like Michael Flatley when I come back. Honestly, mate, I'm going to be careful. But yeah, so at the moment, unfortunately, I'm caught in the web of the NHS, and
you're not really sure what's happening.
So I don't know what the timescale is going to be because the initial X-ray showed that the AC joint was not separated, subluxated, where it's like slightly underneath the other one.
All right.
But because of the damage and that, or the way that the injury happened, they think there might be some rotator cuff damage, so I need the MRI before we know whether it needs surgery or not. So
you're doing the dance with that now, or it was supposed to be like, was it last week and then now?
Yeah, they could
time.
Have just referred me from day one, but instead they bring you in for a pointless appointment to be like, oh yeah, the shoulder's still fucked. It's like, yep, still fucked. I'm like,
yeah, I'll see you in 2 weeks time.
Needs an MRI. Yeah, needed an MRI last time I spoke to you. Yep, so it did. All right, MRI booked. But no, thankfully, like, you know, joking aside, the MRI is coming next Thursday, so then I'll be able to...
You'll know where to go from there and
put together a plan. And that's like, you know, last time I was injured, I was on the mats every day still, just sat watching. Mm. Like, I haven't been back in now because before I go back, I want to know how long my recovery is. So hopefully once I know whether it's surgery or not, it's going to be either like, you know, 2 or 3 months or...
Yeah, but with the rib, like, you can kind of go by feel and you can... You were testing the waters and like... I remember there was one time you went in and it was like, you went to do a forward row and you're like, nope.
Yeah.
And like, you know, at least you know, like, and I mean, time off the mats is fucking, do you know when it's something you like, it is fucking, as you say along, like, fucking, it's a pure bollocks, like, and it's just, I suppose, just one of these things, it's going to happen, I suppose. Everybody's have some fucking story, don't they? And better get it, like, it hasn't happened to me yet, and I'm like, fuck's sake, because the back is nothing, like, 4 weeks is nothing for, you know. I mean, and
this is the first, like, I don't want to say it's major because I don't know it's major yet. Yeah. You know, I've been off the mats, what would we say, 5 weeks now? So
yeah,
four or five weeks.
That's a long time,
But like, I tell you what, brother, I thought I had my life together. Turned out I was just really good at structuring things.
Around jiu-jitsu.
It, like, doing things whilst I was waiting to lift weights or waiting to do jiu-jitsu. Like, I just did stuff to go. Now I don't have those kind of, like, even through COVID, I still had kettlebells, right?
Yeah.
I was, like, even though my life was in tatters, like, my schedule, sorry, was in tatters, I would still do, get up early, do kettlebells, eat well. Whereas now, because I don't have, like, jiu-jitsu or lifting, I'm kind of, like...
I mean, to be honest with you, if I wasn't working so late enough, so even the two of us could have fallen into a really downward spiral there 4 weeks ago, going on beers and stuff. And then the White Eagle was closed, so that wouldn't help either.
For sure, man. For sure. No, it could have been a slippery one. But, you know, I had a couple of weeks of fucking feeling sorry for myself and, you know, just slipping back into bad habits. But this week I've really, like, you know, I'm doing what I can. You know, I've put together a kettlebell routine using literally just one side of my body. Strapped the sling on, and I went for a run with the sling on Wednesday. So, like,
how'd that feel?
Shit, but
you're out there. You feel
know
a bit better mentally.
Like, I feel better for doing the movement stuff this week, even if it's very light, and even if it's like a little bit. And like, you know, you can only feel sorry for yourself for so long.
Yeah,
it's like, you know, we do this sport. Injuries are going to come with it. It's like I know that I'll be back on the mats, and it's just a case of when.
Yeah,
so
that's
that. But yeah.
So, What else have we fucking got?
Often. Pad's come, got this. I wanted to give Pad a little shout out actually before we get into the interview. Cause,
Paddy Daly episode 21 for people that would be listening and maybe
Paddy,
might know.
Paddy Daly, isn't it?
Daly?
I don't think he likes being called that, mate. But yeah, anyway.
Pad, actually, give out to me putting an eye in, yeah.
Our mate Pad, he's got a super fight coming up, the All Stars Invitational. It's on Sunday, so the Sunday after this airs in Wallington. They call it they said London on the kind of poster, but I think it's pretty much Surrey. It's quite far south. So, good luck, Pad.
To be fair, it is probably Daly because it's D-A-L-Y. It's not an I.
Yeah, no, I know.
That's why you're correct.
That's why I corrected you, mate. But he's fighting this Patrico fellow. They're both blue belts.
I think he said he fought him before, didn't he?
Did he?
I could be wrong.
Or they've got a mutual... a mutual opponent or something. But anyway, Paddy, a weight category above his normal category, competes at on a couple of, what is it, weeks' notice, if that?
4 days' notice.
4 days' notice, stepping in for this match. So, yeah, good luck.
And it's really good for him as well, because he's on a winning spree as well at the minute. Like,
he's had a good little run. Yeah, he's been doing his social media work as well. He's obviously catching some attention.
Shout out to Paddy, yeah. Good. Catch up to him with a few beers or something.
Yeah, definitely get him back on once he's... you know, got his win, a few more wins under his belt, and he'll probably be too big time for us by then, be Hollywooding us.
Yeah.
The next thing I want to just mention, actually, which is going to sound really difficult to say without sounding like I'm shitting on Paddy, but in no way is this intended as a shit at all. Look, I, you know, fair play on the match and stuff, but at what at what point do we classify something a super fight? You know, that's a phrase that I find in, you know, you could, because like, I get it. It's like, instead of matches, right? We, you know, instead of tournament style matches, it's just a one-off match. But like, you know, in, you know, an amateur boxing match, that's just one match. It's not like,
In fairness, yeah. Do you know when people go up weight classes, don't they call that super fight? Paddy's going up a weight class. Technically, super fight.
Yeah, yeah. But I just mean in general. This is why I say I don't want to seem like I'm talking about Paddy specifically here, but it's something you see.
Oh, no, I think it's nonsense. Like,
it's something you see all the time in jiu-jitsu. It's like it's a super fight and it's like two local purple belts and it's like, I don't know.
I think to be fair, like,
are we cheapening the term super fight by...
I think the term super fight is just like made to sell tickets in like an organisation. Like, not obviously we know that, but I'm saying it's easy to just take things that's used in the UFC and XYZ and put it into your thing, like, you know what I mean, and say, oh yeah, we're having a super fight, yeah, and then it sells tickets, like.
Yeah. No, I think that was the initial goal of it, wasn't it?
Like, I mean, I don't think the word super fight is gonna sell jiu-jitsu tickets.
No, and I mean, if it was like, you know, alongside ADCC, you've got like two top level black belts that aren't competing in the tournament that are a one-off event alongside the tournament, that by all means call it a super fight. But if it's just an individual match alongside a day of tournaments, you could just call it a match. It doesn't need to be called a super fight. Yeah. Maybe I'm getting up on my high horse because I haven't been invited to any super fights, mate. But
I definitely think that there's something there. Yeah,
probably
you mentioned.
Big up, Pat. He's been working hard and earned it. And like I say, this was more a joke around the phrase super fight, not the upcoming match he's got at the weekend. What's your preference, actually, over tournaments? Or would, you know, because... rocking up and just having one match on the day sounds fucking lovely, you know.
And he's probably getting paid for it.
You know what I mean?
Because he's been invited.
So getting paid, rocking up, having one match instead of having to go through three or four, like, you know.
I mean, like, I love the idea of the grappling industries round robin and doing gi and no gi, but man, hanging around. And then, like, when you get, like, especially the time I did it, it was my very first competition, done my first gi match. Got paper cut to choke within fucking 1 minute. Never seen a paper cut in my life. Didn't know what was going on. Forgot I had legs, like, from the waist down. I was literally trying to fight elbows.
I should do.
Yeah, just like, what the fuck is going on at my neck here? Lost that. 5 minutes later, I'm on the mat against... I went up a weight class as well, like, in the whole thing, because I was like, I'm not cutting weight. And I actually came in, like, 1 pound over. So it's like, I could have rent out and had a run, like. But, but I don't run. People know that. That was lies. But yeah, I got guillotined then in that one. So like straight away, just standing guillotine. Then swept me by kicking the legs out from underneath me and followed me to the ground while choking me. I couldn't talk properly for 2 days after. I think I've told that story before. But then I went back in and three guillotines, you know what I mean? Just as you do.
But you should get the chance for redemption. No, there, but I'm saying
that was like my first white belt competition. Full energy, spazzy as fuck. Now I'm blue and I'm a little less spazzy and a little bit more old and broken, but... it's like, I don't even think that I want to do both anymore. Like, I think I'll just go to competitions and pick, like, if I want to do a gi, I'll go to competition.
But let's reduce that even quicker and not just gi and no gi. Like,
do you know what would be perfect?
Would you rather do a tournament or just rock up, have a match, do your match?
Two, do you know what? One match in the gi, one match in no gi, about 2 hours apart. Sexy. Out the gap. Win both of them as well, not lose.
Because it seemed like, you know, Jimmy, for example, you know, the sort of things that he does now, a lot of them are...
all invitational.
They're all, like, invitational. Like, Andrew, we had on, we're talking... It does seem like it's moving a little bit more in that direction, you know? So, like, an event, like, you know, like a boxing event, where even if it's not top-level boxers, right, it will be, like, any boxing event will be of an evening in a hall. They'll sell tickets, you know? The fighters won't be paying to... compete. If anything, they'll be making a bit of money, and instead the promotion is made by attracting spectators and selling an entertaining event, and it feels like, you know, there is, you know, a growth within grappling towards that. And for me, I hadn't actually fully thought about it till the interview, which is coming up, so I don't want to spoil it too much, but we were talking about the equivalent between jiu-jitsu and MMA in Ireland, and it was a case of paying €60 to get, you know, a chance to win a £2 medal, or being paid to have a chance to, like, you know, actually have a scrap in MMA. And that was part of what, you know, made MMA a more attractive prospect for our interview guest, for Dennis.
To be fair, like, thinking, just like, I'm just forming thoughts as we're talking about it, Paddy is actually one person that like has the personality for invitations.
Man will sell tickets.
Man will sell tickets. Like, he's entertaining. Like, I just love being around the man in general. Like, you pick a Tuesday at fucking 2 o'clock. Like, being around Paddy will be the best place to be.
Infectious personality, yeah, for sure.
Just brilliant. Like, so.
Okay, it's.
I was quite moving swiftly along.
But yeah, so yeah, no, I quite like the idea of matches. We don't have to call them all super fights, but we can have a night of good matches and actually put on a show and get some people in, and stop charging people an exorbitant amount.
Just while we're talking about these invitations and stuff, yeah. What do you think about jiu-jitsu matches in the cage?
I mean, do it where you want to do it.
Do you know the way they put it in an octagon and they do it in a show like that? But I'm
for
saying,
me, like, if we're gonna be talking about creating an entertaining package we want to sell to people, doing it in a cage makes it look more. Yeah. Of a spectacle, you know, you've got to do it on a raised platform to make it more of a spectacle. You can't have everyone. You know how tough it is when you rock up to, like, I don't want to shit on any of the local opens, but you rock up to a local, like, tournament. Yeah. Sometimes you can't even get a good view of the mat you want to see.
That's
so
true,
like,
yeah.
You've got to have it on some sort of raised platform, and you've got to stop people rolling off the edge and breaking, or maybe not. Maybe that can be a new
Have you seen the? I think it's ADCC in America where they go off the mat and it actually goes around, like, and the ref is people are just clearing and they're on the carpet, like.
So if it's in a scramble or a submission, like if there's a kind of key scramble going on or a submission that's like locked in or not close to being on, they'll let it go out of bounds and it'll go like onto the carpet.
Do you know what I love about it is when the camera angle hits a certain way, it looks like people having a fight at a wedding, except they're in rash garden shorts because they're just in basically a hotel where there's people standing around. It's fantastic.
Yeah. Again, if we're talking about making it like an appealing spectator sport, maybe we shouldn't be letting people fight on the carpet, but personally,
I want to see that.
Fucking want to see people fight on the carpet. But I love a good fight at a wedding, so what can I say? Maybe I'm not the.
I just like a dance and a sing,
epitome of class. But I'd love to see it. Love to see it going in a direction where we're, like I say, not charging people to kind of compete at their hobby, giving them other options at that.
I mean, so, it's good that these promotions, and I mean, isn't that All Stars that's starting that?
Yeah,
so it's a spin-off of All Star. So that's quite good.
I think they're realizing, the direction it's going in.
They have the finger on the pulse, like.
Trying to stay with the times, gradually, organisations like the IBJJF hopefully will, be reserved for a select few because, there's no way you can be paying 120 quid for your hobby. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you're not got any chance of winning
even
a penny of that back.
That's sunk
cost. Even if you're the best guy in the world, that's sunk cost.
That's the price of competition, isn't it?
But yeah.
So we had that app on, I think.
That was the other thing, yeah.
Yeah, so I've seen this following, obviously, with our guest today, Dennis. I'll get into that in a minute when we actually tee up the interview. But I've been asking a few. I've been watching the show on Channel 4, and one of the lads that's on it is Shemrock. And he's from Liverpool, and he had it up on his, and it's like an anonymous thing. I was like, that's fucking cool. Because, like, I said, people will probably want to fire loads of abuse for us. And I was actually, after working, I just went straight across to the pub, got a steak, and I had a couple of pints, and I said, right, let it begin.
I was terrified by the prospect. I was like, fuck, don't let people hide behind anonymity. But no, people were actually...
it wasn't too bad.
People were actually super sound. I did, like I said, kind of alluded to it at the beginning, the one comment about the mics and stuff. Me and Mike were... just talking about that before we came on air, and we know there's some issues. We're sat in my loft using lapel mics. If there are any, like, I'm sure that's one of the regular listeners, or someone we probably know. So if there are any resources you've got that you think might benefit us and help us improve the sound quality, because we are interested in doing that at no cost, though. I've got to be really clear. We've got to be able to improve it using the equipment we've got, but costing us nothing. If somehow it can make us money, then fantastic.
I mean, like, the OnlyFans thing didn't kick off, so what can I do? Like,
no, you even took it to the A&E. We didn't talk about that. Earlier in the show when we were talking about, in this episode, when we were talking about Mike taking Kai to A&E, what he neglected to mention was he didn't get changed out of his rash guard and he was wearing a...
Yeah, subscribe to me and my
ex-Marshall OnlyFans rash guard.
Yeah. So I was like... He's like, take a picture with me. And I was like, his thumb's fucked and he's doing the thumbs up. And I was like, I don't really want to to be broadcasting on his social media that I broke his thumb. Like,
you broke like, his thumb in an OnlyFans rash guard. Yeah, and then
I did, like, so I said, fuck it.
Paraded him around A&E.
Yeah, I did it. I had to be in A&E. And people were looking at me, like, people were giving me funny looks, and, like, I could see hilarious, and I was just going, this is, like, I'm the kind of person that, like, I, as much as people try to kill me in the jiu-jitsu gym, I feel safe there. I don't want to take my personality from the jiu-jitsu gym outside.
And put it outside.
Unless I have 6 pints. Then it's the same.
When you're taking a photo of his broken thumb, be like, sorry, it's for the OnlyFans. It's a very niche content. And then just freak them out so much that they don't want to come anywhere near you.
Yeah, I don't know. But fucking, yeah, so we got a good few replies. I'll do that again a few times. So
yeah, no,
if people want to hurl a bit of abuse or send some love or actually give quality feedback, like that comment about the mics and stuff.
Yeah, but yeah, if you've got any good, joking aside, got any good resources, fire them over to the podcast 5 p.m. and I'll pick them up and we'll see what we can do to give your ears a more satisfactory listening experience. The other question was about the Octagon MMA, which kind of segues beautifully into our interview. So yeah, Mike kind of got me onto this, and he seems to have made friends with the entire fucking cast. So why don't you tee it up, Mike? What is it? Octagon, you know, yeah, Octagon, so the brand?
So Octagon MMA is the brand. Now, I didn't know anything about it, but what happened, how I got wind of this originally, right, was actually on the DGen BJJ Instagram, and I was just surfing through stuff, because usually I just like a lot of things, and I look through a lot of stories, just click, 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 because it puts us into an algorithm of, because I nearly follow the same people anyway, but there's like a good proportion of people that I don't, so like you just see them stories, like a few things, it puts us into algorithms that puts us out into other content, like people you might know, kind
marketing,
of stuff.
Marketing Mike, ladies and gents,
trying to, but that's how it's supposed to work. I don't know, this is bro science, me saying this, but
barely even bro science.
So the Octagon thing came up, and it was like Ireland versus England, they're all living in a house, blah,
so, the,
blah, blah, blah.
So the concept is Ireland versus England.
Sorry, yeah.
For two groups of four, right, 8 fighters. They all live in a house together.
So it's basically the Ultimate Fighter, right?
No, I was going to say, no. It's not, though. It's if you think you've heard about a show like this before, you're mistaken, apparently, because me and Michael both made comparisons between this show and the Ultimate Fighter, and we're told we were very wrong. This is nothing like the Ultimate Fighter. So let me just explain the concept. You've got a group of lads that are coached by two different fellas that are all both ex-fighters themselves. They are living in a house together. Each week, two of them fight. And in between the fighting, they get up to different shenanigans. They go on like tasks and stuff like that. So spot the difference.
No, but the funny thing is, right, I'm actually, like, I'm this is very unprofessional. I'm trying to find the post, because when it came out, right, I seen this post and it's like something you've never seen before. And like me off the DJ and BJJ, Instagram comment, yes, we have. It's called The Ultimate Fighter. And he's going, yeah. And I said, but I'm still going to watch it, because like I still had every intention, because it's Ireland versus England. Like, and it's, you know, it's not like American and, you know, blah, blah, blah. It's like something close to us. Like, it's culturally fucking more closer, like, because there's a big disconnect, I think, between fucking Americans in there and like frat boys, we'll say, and young Irish, well, some Americans like kind of come across as that fratty, even though they're younger, older, don't they? And we'll say, like, you're not going to
have... Are you thinking of specific people you've seen on The Ultimate Fighter, Mike, when you're making this analogy?
I've never watched one episode.
Have you not? Ah, so you weren't...
Sorry, I've watched Conor McGregor one, which had obviously a couple of Irish people in it, but no, I'm just saying, like, the American thing, the way they come across on television. I'm rambling now. I'm actually after going way too far on this. Basically, anyway, I said that post. Next thing... I was looking and I seen Shamrock was one of the Irish coaches. So Paddy Houlihan is head coach. Shamrock is the assistant coach. And I was like, fuck, I don't know him. How don't I know him? And like, I had...
So you didn't know who Shamrock was?
No.
Because I didn't until you put me on some Twitter. Yeah, but so, if you don't, yeah, people who don't know who Paddy Houlihan is...
No, so I Googled him straight away.
Come up.
And it was like, man was on the run for 10 years for a crime he didn't commit. I was like, what?
Phenomenal.
This is fantastic. And like, I think I might have been a few beers deep, not sure. And so I just gave him a message. I said, man, I don't know your story. I think it sounds absolutely fucking class. Would you like to come on the podcast? And he replied, like, and I've been talking with him then. And then, obviously, then I watched the episode, seen Dennis, and I was like, I seen the verbal jabs he was having with people. And I thought in the first couple of episodes, like, that the Irish were coming across as a bit bollocksy, and I do say that in the interview. But as it progresses, you can see it's banter, and like, you need to watch the show if you haven't watched it, because Brad Pickett is the English coach, and I thought some of it was a bit much, but then when
Brad Pickett and Paddy, isn't it?
When you watch a bit more though, he just couldn't stand the Irish lads, like. And I don't want to give too many spoilers, because you should watch it, and obviously...
Yeah, no, it's good watching. I've watched a few episodes.
I actually said, you went a bit hard on that one on a post, because he commented on a post on Irish Fighters TV, it's a page on Instagram, and I said, I went a bit too hard. And then I just landed up DMing him, and we're actually DMing a bit back and forth, and then I just said, here, if you ever want to go on the podcast, and he's like, yeah, no bother. I was like, you're the soundest dude in the face of the planet, because like, obviously it's a current show. You know, like, he's in demand, and he's coming to us. We're an up-and-coming podcast.
Yeah, it was a week after his episode where he won the fight, wasn't it? It was that we recorded the episode.
Sorry, I've been talking to him so long.
It's because we recorded it retroactively.
I was DMing him at 12 o'clock at night.
we give more shout-outs to the show in the interview. So, without further ado, here it is. So with us today, we've got... professional MMA fighter, current competitor on Octagon Challenge, England versus Ireland, self-proclaimed heel, Dennis the Menace Fringbong. Thanks for joining us today, brother. How's it going?
Not too bad. By the way, I'm going to correct you there. I'm not a self-proclaimed heel. I am a heel.
You get no arguments anyway. We're the one people who won't be arguing with you.
Say, anyone that's been watching along definitely knows that, bro. So if, you've been entertaining, been kind of... carrying the show when it comes to some of the shtick in the house, man. It's been enjoyable to watch, we were just saying. So, let's start with the show itself, I guess. Airing on Channel 4 and DAZN at the moment. Octagon Challenge UK versus Ireland. It's, I don't know, for those that aren't watching, they should be. It's an entertaining watch for anyone that's looking to get into like an MMA kind of reality TV show. Mm. So, talking of getting into it, that's kind of what we were asking. Like,
how did you get picked?
How did the kind of selection process come around? I know you did a couple of pro fights before that. What got you in the door there?
Yeah, so I mean, Octagon was like one of the promotions I've been looking at as sort of like the next step in my career. Mm-hmm. You know, I started this sport fairly late. Obviously, I only made my amateur debut in 2021. I was like 26 years old. So, I just sort of took a load of fights through amateur, built a bit of a name, ran through people. I had like 8 fights in a year, so just over a year. And decided it was time that I was ready to go pro. Had those couple of fights, and then obviously the opportunity came around through my manager, Sid Mogul Management. And I took a bite at it. I don't really have time to be doing all this thing that people do now of like fighting 6 or 7 cans,
yeah,
getting to like 6 or 7-0 over the course of 2 years, and then, you know, building my name up. 2 years, man, I'd be 30 years old already. So
yeah, you have to get it in as quick as you can.
I'm happy enough, and I'm happy enough with where my level's at. From people I train with in the gym, high level guys, comparing myself to them, skill for skill. I felt like I was ready to take on that next level of competition. So, as soon as that opportunity came around, I jumped at it. 100%.
You're training at Manchester Top Team now, is that correct?
Yeah, Manchester Top Team, mate.
And how did the transition from there, from home, go? Or was that before you went pro? Or?
It was just before I went pro, yeah. It was a bit of a weird one. Like, when I started MMA, my first 2 fights, I wasn't actually training in an MMA gym. I was training between Dublin Combat Academy, which is a Muay Thai gym predominantly.
All right.
And East Coast Jiu-Jitsu, so a separate Jiu-Jitsu gym.
Yeah.
And I just sort of like, over COVID, I started deciding that I was going to get into MMA. I started doing little bits and bobs with some MMA guys, but I wasn't actually training in an MMA gym. I was training striking Jiu-Jitsu separately. I basically no wrestling to speak of, no idea of cage work or anything like that. And then my second amateur fight, I lost by decision. I felt a big part of that was because my lack of understanding of the actual MMA game and the scoring system and the cage work and stuff. So a few different factors came into it. Obviously, COVID at the time, the lockdowns that were on in Ireland, and they were a bit more, a lot more lax in the UK.
Yeah, they're rootless.
I got a job opportunity in Manchester, and I was working full time at the time, and a relationship I was in fell apart, partially due to COVID. So I just said it was time for a bit of a move. Manchester is a nice city. It's like, I like to describe it as London and Dublin's retarded love child. You know, the people up here in the north of England are not like the southerners. They're like a bit more like the Irish. You know, they understand our crack. They understand the banter.
Yeah.
And it was a little bit bigger than Dublin and a bit more to do, a bit more diversity and stuff, and high level gyms. So when I first moved over to Manchester, I went to Predators just because of the handiness of where it was in terms of my work and stuff like that. It was only a 15-minute walk from work. I was there for a little bit, a few months, like 3 or 4 months. And then I actually fought a guy in my third amateur fight from Manchester top team, Callum Connor. He had a prolific Muay Thai background. He was 4-0. And I went to split decision with him, and it was a good fight, a really good fight. Some people thought I won. But it is what it is. It's an amateur fight. We both had a good fight. We both gained a lot of respect for each other. And I actually incidentally bumped into him the next day. Just in town walking around. He was going for a coffee with his dad, and I was with my mate. And we just had a bit of a chat. He invited me down, went down for sparring, and fell in love with the place. The rest is history.
You don't want to be telling too much of those stories now. People won't be thinking you're the heel that you're making yourself out to be.
Well, like, I mean, anyone that sort of has met me, like even the Team Ireland guys when I was in on that challenge show when we went in the house, like after like 2 or 3 days around me, they were kind of like, oh, you're not as much of a prick as you seem like online. You know, like you're actually all right. You're actually a sound guy. And the fact of the matter is, mate, people don't understand the way the game works. I'm a big WWE fan from back in the day. I'm not so much anymore, but when I was a kid, and I took a page out of, you know, the Chael Sonnen and the Kobe Covington book, and said, look, like, you have to have something about you. I'm not a 19-year-old up-and-coming superstar or whatever, so I have to do something, you know, and
try and get the eyes
already,
on.
I'm already a bit of, like, you know, I'm able to sort of give a bit of verbal abuse. I love a verbal joust, and I do have a bit of a sharp tongue, and I came from a place where, like I said to you, you have to be able to trash shit. You have to be able to take and give abuse in equal measure. So I just leaned a bit more into that side of my personality. Like, it's not an act. I am like that, you know, with me mates. I've said well worse things and had said well worse things to me by my best mates, you know. Like,
I think we all do. I think we all do behind closed doors, but nobody has a camera on you. You know,
yeah,
I think we...
You know, like, And I think it's just keeping that up when the camera's on, and that's it. You know?
Yeah.
And that's the only difference.
So. Do you think anyone in the house was magnified when the camera come on? Yeah. You don't have to say names or anything, but it was just...
I was going to say, because you were saying that they didn't... like, the guys are like, oh, you're not as much of a prick as you seem online in person. Do you feel that people maybe play up to the cameras? Are you different when the cameras are on or off?
No, I mean, me personally, I was just... I definitely cranked it up a little bit, but when the cameras were off, like, I cranked it up a little bit on the show as a whole. Cameras and no cameras, I was just terrorizing these English lads all the time.
It comes across.
Sometimes it just happened to catch some of it with the camera, you know what I mean? And usually if they see me giving someone shit, they would run over with the camera and try and capture that.
I mean, if they didn't have a camera on you full time, they were missing out on some good one-liners, I'd say.
They missed out on some stuff, definitely. They missed out on some stuff. But I do feel like some of the guys in the house played up to the cameras in the opposite way, actually. Not in the sense of, like, giving shit, but in the sense of, like, camera, they'd be a bit more willing to give shit. And then when the cameras were on, they'd be a bit more like, oh, I'm the good guy. I'm worried about what people might think of me, my family might think of me when they see this show. I want to be the baby face, so I can't be seen to be giving and taking shit.
Give us a peek behind the curtain, man. Name some names.
George and Jake. I think Jake's a bit of a quiet guy anyway. But George was definitely trying to play the baby face.
It seemed like that when you seen some of his interviews, that when he was speaking afterwards, he comes across like there is a little bit of a streak in him, a streak of anger, or, you know, something like that. All right, like, I don't know.
He's definitely an angry kid, you know what I mean? Like, people don't land in the sport of MMA where we get down to basically boxer shorts and topless, jump in a cage with another bloke after training for 3 months or 2 months or whatever it is, and try and kill each other. Like that's not a normal thing for people to do that had a good life, that had a, like, an easy, you know, comfortable life. Yeah, so, you know, I think he definitely does have a bit of a dark streak to him. And I think I exposed some of that. When, you know, obviously the whole situation with him saying he doesn't say he has to, he's not going to say he's going to smash in his face because he doesn't have to. But then eventually I got him saying he's going to smash my face in. So obviously there is some deep-seated anger issues there. And I just needed to press the right buttons for that to come out.
I think you're very good at doing that. But, you know, pressing buttons, it kind of seemed like you had a game plan when you went in. You went straight for Hassan. And then, I don't know, was it a weakness or something that you saw or something that... Or maybe it was just good fun because maybe the way he was reacting. But it was like always made clear and early from episode, halfway into episode one, or like it was Team Ireland, Team England and Team Hassan. You know, I mean, it seemed like he was on his own little island there for a while. Like, I mean, not saying that the English boys weren't about him and lifting him up, but I think he kind of singled himself out a bit. Now, I don't know what was happening in the house because it was hard to see, but like it was made...
Yeah, I mean, obviously, like, each episode's filmed over 4 days.
All right.
So you have to understand, like, you know, 4 days, what's that? 48. Over 80 hours, right?
Yeah, and you're getting 30 minutes of it.
All that into 1 hour of an episode, and that includes the fight.
Fight, yeah.
So a lot of stuff was left out. What it was with Hassan, I believe what happened was he is from London. The rest of the guys are from sort of up north in England. So like George Staines, Jake, and Bo. Okay. So I think they knew about me from the amateur scene. They knew about some of the shit talk. And they knew not to get involved in it with me. They were probably told by the coach, don't get involved in it.
I know what he's like.
Just draw you in and then it'll be like, oh, now you have to keep going. I don't think Hassan knew about me. So I think at the start, I was just going to everyone. I just gave everyone a little bit of a jab, a little bit of a verbal jab. And he bit. So I was like, okay, you're my target now. So I just went straight for him and then I was just bombarding him with it. As for the whole Team England, Team Hassan thing, obviously you've seen it in the show. Maybe people didn't notice it, but obviously we were in the house and so we seen it. He was there for all of their weight cuts. All of them helped each other weight cut. When it came to it, going for the runs, being there when they were sweating in the wraps and stuff. When it came to Hassan cutting weight, none of them were there. They went into town, into Bratislava, and he was on his own with Brad Pickett cutting weight, and I was in there eating jelly beans in front of him.
I seen that, yeah.
You know, so...
I think you riled Brad up really bad at that one as well. Sorry to cut across you.
Yeah.
Brad really... I think Brad took a real dislike to you. And it's actually hilarious because he didn't seem to get the gist of, like, it was a bit of banter at all. Like, I think he kind of went, these Irish lads are just terrorising the boys. And I think he couldn't handle it. I mean, I was texting you privately and I said, Jesus, like, we're coming across as a bit of bollocks, like, you know. But I think as you watch it more... I'm sorry not to be cutting across, but and just like it's thoughts I was having as I was talking to you, like there's a lot of production in it as well, and like there is people egging you on behind the scenes, which a lot of people mightn't factor into it. They just think, oh, this is like, where are you getting water balloons all the time? That was something I had a thought afterwards, like nobody has a house with water.
We actually personally went to Tesco and got water balloons.
Okay.
All right. And the water gun and the lock.
Yeah.
But as for Brad, like I think Brad's like a proper like London geezer, you know, like proper like.
He's an old head as well, isn't he?
He's a bit one of these like. I think he grew up quite well off in London, you know. His mum made shoes for Elton John, personalized shoes. So, I think he's one of these sort of like loves England, loves the St. George's Cross, you know, probably loves the royal family deep down inside somewhere, even though they're nonsense.
Let's go.
And I mean, like you can say, people can say whatever they want about us being, you know, terrorizing them, but at the end of the day, like we never invaded them, so.
Yeah. 800 years, yeah, and we'll fight you for 800 more. Yeah, anyway, a lot of references that probably will go over the head of some of the listeners as we're based in England, but we'll keep it on the straight and narrow anyway for the minute. When we have you back again and you're champion, we'll come in and we'll go all into it. Yeah, we'll go full heel.
100%.
So obviously, going into it, the goal's to win, right? You want to come out with that contract. You want to come out with the success. How much do you feel, or if at all, like any of the, you know, the shenanigans that go on? Not just you, obviously, you being your heel, being the heel, being the character you are, sells fights. You know, builds interest like in and outside of the show. But like with the things like the activities and the general kind of things that they've got you doing around the house, like cleaning up after each other and stuff like that. Do you feel that takes away from your focus and ability to kind of like get on with what you're there to do, or do you find it actually adds to your motivation at all?
It definitely was a weird one, mate. It was definitely a weird one. So as you say, like sometimes we were doing challenges like 3 days before, and then we were like having to film. So like you'd have weight cut. And you're like made weight. Normally, like my weigh-in day, I've made weight in the morning, and I spend the day eating, have a nap. You know what I mean? And I'm chilling. But with this, obviously, you had to go do interviews. You had to sit in an interview room for 2 hours, sweating. So it was. I wouldn't say a distraction, but it was just a weird factor. That was unexpected. So it was it definitely made things a bit stranger, but. That was part of the pressure test. I think some people failed the pressure test and some people thrived under it. I believe I thrived under it. I believe I came into that house ready, not knowing when we came there first, whether I had to fight the Irish lads, whether like who would be fighting who, what the plan of action was going to be, who I'd be fighting, what style I'd be fighting. So I just, in the lead up to it, I just came in there prepared to fight anyone on 3 or 4 days notice, whatever it was. And that was it. We had a great coaching team there, Paddy and Shem, and they had us well prepared, and Paddy really regimented our training, so it was just all structured. We came in, we knew what we were going to do, warm up, get into it, whoever's fighting next, we're sort of focusing on them but still getting our own training in. And the facility was absolutely world class as well. Like, we had everything we needed there. They did make it easier by sort of providing us food and all that we needed for our weight cuts and rehydration stuff and that. So it was a bit of both, to be honest. There was difficulties, but there were some things that were made easier also.
I think it's spoiler for anyone that hasn't seen your own episode or people that have yet to watch. Like, I think when you got the head kick KO knockout, and I was saying, like, it's like a Leon Edwards, Kamaru Usman kind of thing, but for your win after it, you were treated to a meal in a fancy restaurant. Like, it just seemed like the perfect storm for, like, you know, a nice meal, especially after a weight cut. Like, and what did the rest of the guys do? Go flying something, or, you know, and you're getting a good splash of food, like, which is exactly what you want after doing your business, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, getting the job done. You don't know what's weird about that, because that was obviously the meal and all that was on the last episode.
Yeah.
But weirdly enough, we had that meal the day of my weigh-in. So after I'd weighed in, that's why I had like risotto and seafood and that. Like, I didn't have any steak. Otherwise, I would have been straight on the steak and I would have had a full bottle of that expensive wine that they paid for us. So I only had like a half glass of wine, just to, you know, have a bit of a taste of the good life. And I had a nice squid ink seafood risotto, and it was some of the nicest food I've ever had in my life. And I was just a bit raging because obviously I was after cutting weight that day, and I couldn't eat too much. I didn't want to overload myself
before the fight.
But yeah, I don't know. Like I say, some of the stuff is like weirdly cut, so some of the stuff isn't.
It's not chronological, like.
It's not chronological, exactly. Yeah. It's like some of the stuff was done days after what it looked like it was, if that makes sense.
That's how you make a good show, isn't it? Good editing.
Yeah, like, so you film an hour over 4 days and then put it in the order you want to tell the funnier story. That makes a bit of sense. I mean, obviously, like you say, the way it's edited together obviously builds up the kind of stress and stuff. You say, like, obviously the facilities and the coaching was top level. Obviously, Paddy's a legend in Irish MMA. Had you trained under him at all before? Had you had any contact with him back home, or was it this your first link up with him?
I'd never trained at him, but I'd run into him at shows and stuff like that where his fighters had been fighting, and obviously, like, he I knew about him, and like I keep saying, it was such a surreal experience because before I ever was in MMA, I think I'd just been doing jiu-jitsu like a few months, maybe 3 or 4 months before I ever got into MMA, but I was a fan of MMA. I remember watching Paddy Houlihan get the first ever win on a UFC win on Irish soil.
Yeah, he was the first. He was the first person out, and he got the first win, wasn't it?
Yeah. So I remember watching that on TV, and like him being like, I put him in the same bracket as Conor. Obviously, Conor went on to do massive things, but I put him, Cathal Pendred, you know, even Artem Lobov.
The goat. He's the goat. Everyone knows, yeah, Artem's,
you know,
the goat.
The goat. The bat. then you know, Aislinn Daly. I put all these.
Yeah.
Fighters in like a bracket of like they were the pioneers of Irish MMA, so to have him there coaching me was so surreal, mate, because that was like what, 6-7 years ago, that was, I saw that happen. And
well, I mean, yeah, just to be in the same training room must be surreal, like, you know what I mean? Yeah, that he's giving you his time,
like, and coaching me and telling me the positives and telling me the positives of my game and telling him like how like part of me like reminds him of like other fighters and that I look up to. So that was like super surreal, and like really really felt blessed to be in that situation. And it kind of gave me a first indication of where my career is going to go in the future, you know. Like, again, I look forward to standing across the cage from the likes of like a Charles Oliveira, and or, you know, maybe not Tony Ferguson, he might be done by the time I'm there, but like, you know, standing across the cage from these guys that I saw on TV for years, like watching them and having that Israel Adesanya Silva moment where you're like looking across like, oh my God, I'm in the cage with this guy that I put on a pedestal, you know?
Yeah, that's cool, man.
Nice. So that is the goal then, obviously. Short term, you know, win the final, get the contract, and then longer term, big organisation, world title.
100%. World title in a big organization is the goal.
I mean,
UFC, like, obviously everyone's really fussed about the UFC, but after some of the stuff I've seen about how they treat their fighters and how the contracts go, and also just, again, factoring in my age and the fact that I won't be Dana's little golden boy at any stage, I'll probably just end up getting fed to one of his golden boys. So I'm not too fussed about the UFC. I'm in here to get a world title in a major promotion, whether that be ONE FC, PFL, UFC. Obviously, Bellator is going to be gone soon, but one of those big promotions, get a world title and get enough money to set up my family. Make sure they never have to struggle. My kids, my parents, my sisters, you know, and obviously I have no kids yet, but my future kids. I want to have kids at some point, but yeah, just, you know, being able to do that and do the most that I can do in the sport and create a legacy.
Do you think you'd do that out of Manchester, or do you think that's something you'd either go back to Ireland for? Do you think? I don't want to say is Manchester top team your home, because I know how quickly gyms can change and how things have to change. Like any of us who lived through COVID know that, you know, you can't really plan too far ahead. But like, in an ideal world, do you see yourself winning a title training out of the UK, or is it something you think to get to that next level you need to maybe go overseas to push the training a bit further?
I believe that the level at Manchester Top Team of training, of coaching, of facilities and of training partners, I think that I can achieve those goals from Manchester. Like I say, I'd never really, I don't think, want to move to like the likes of America or anything like that. Like, it's too far away from home. Yeah, I feel like Manchester's still close enough to my home that I can always,
it's only a couple hours flight.
If I ever need to go back.
Yeah.
But it's also got amazing facilities, and I've sort of settled down here now in Manchester, and you know, I've built a network. I've got friends.
Once you're in a routine, you're in your routine. It's kind of, once you build a routine, I suppose it's like home, isn't it? It's just home from home.
Exactly. It's like a second home to me. Now. It's my adopted home. So yeah, I believe I will do that in Manchester, and I believe that there's a few good guys that will come out of Manchester Top Team in the near future. You know, there's a lot of guys coming up. That will do big things, and I think we'll see that in the next 2 or 3 years.
That's awesome, man. Yeah, it's UK MMA and UK martial arts in general, the grappling scene, so going from strength to strength, and obviously, yeah, MMA is a few steps ahead of that, in my opinion, really. It's good to hear. Good to hear. And obviously yourself, you kind of touched on it a little bit earlier. You got into MMA quite late, didn't you? Did I hear you say you were a track and field when you, that was your kind of athletic output when you were a bit younger?
Yeah, so when I think I started track and field when I was about 14 or so, 15, maybe going on 15. obviously when I was much younger, I tried all sports. I sort of played everything: basketball, football, Gaelic football, rugby. For the UK fans, Gaelic football is like a blend between like rugby, soccer, and bleeding basketball and everything. But yeah, I sort of played everything. But I just took a, I had a bit of a natural talent for track and field, to be honest. Like when I started it with the school team, I was like smoking people that had been training a while. So started training that and went pretty far with that, and then got a bit of an injury. And I believe that I wouldn't get to where I wanted to get to in that sport through that injury. So I ended up stopping, went a bit off the rails, went a bit, you know, in uni, started doing a bit of partying and stuff, found, you know, girls and drink and all that other stuff. So
it's the very minute you hit 16, 17, you find alcohol, life starts to change dramatically.
Yeah.
And in
yeah,
Ireland, yeah, it could be 14, 15. It doesn't, depending on what part of the country you're living in.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I found alcohol a bit younger, but it was, the track and field sort of kept me away from it. But it was in uni when I, like, obviously moved away from home, moved down to Dublin, and things went a bit out of control. You know, I was a bit of a wild child. But yeah, then towards the end of uni, found jiu-jitsu and sort of put myself into it. Never really had aspirations to compete or anything like that. I was only sort of doing it to learn self-defense and sort of have something to do that would keep me away from all the partying and that. And then sort of was quite naturally good at that as well. So, and
jiu-jitsu was your first martial art? Yeah, like proper martial art.
Yeah, I mean, I started initially it was Muay Thai. I think I did that for like a month or two, and then found jiu-jitsu, got absolutely wrapped up by this 15-year-old, and was like, wow, I have to be able to do this. There's no way that I can allow kids out there to just wrap me up like that, you know what I mean?
It's terrible, isn't it?
Yeah, that's how it gets.
On your jiu-jitsu, what belt are you currently? Or
I'm still a blue belt for the last like 4.5 years.
Okay.
So a perennial blue belt, you might say.
Do you do much in the gi now? Or is it, obviously you don't need it, but we were wondering because obviously we trained jiu-jitsu. That's how we started the podcast.
Yeah.
Two of us met on.
I haven't competed in the gi since before COVID. To be honest, I always sort of did better in no-gi, even though I trained a lot more gi. I did better in comps in no-gi. And obviously, like, did a bit of focus on that.
It translates better for MMA as well, doesn't it? So.
Yeah, you know, and to be honest, I always kind of had the want to fight MMA at some point, but it kind of went on, and I got to a stage where I felt like I'm a bit too old for it. It was only through COVID and running into, like, training in the same room as, like, some MMA fighters, like Bellator guys from SBG, some guys in Cage Warriors and stuff like that. And then, obviously, Shem, I met him in the gym as well.
All right.
And, yeah, he sort of, like, gave me the right guidance that I needed to go into MMA. And I was sick of paying 60 quid, 70, 80 quid each time to compete in a jiu-jitsu competition. And I said, oh, you can just fight MMA for free. In fact, sometimes even get paid for it. So I was like, yeah, get me onto that.
You've actually beaten, you beat a friend of the podcast. We have a friend who has a podcast in Ireland. It's Human Z Jitsu. His name's Andrew Quinn.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know him?
Yeah, good old Andrew.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, we competed. I think we competed a couple times against each other, yeah, at Blue Belt.
He just said to me, when I put up the story, he put on a kind of thing and we were talking, and he goes, oh, do you know, I said, do you know him? And he goes, yeah, he said, I fought against him in Naga. And I goes, oh, how'd you go? He goes, he armbarred the shit out of me.
Yeah, but, it was a good scrap, to be fair. I think that was Naga, yeah. So I did pretty well at Blue Belt. Like, I got my Blue Belt that year and then like won like a lot of the stuff. Had a few like little invitationals and stuff like that. Beat some good guys, you know, guys that like went on to do big things, like win European medals and stuff like that.
Okay.
And then obviously, I feel like now if I rolled it up with those same guys in jiu-jitsu, they'd probably wrap me up. But
the very minute you pull out the striking, they'd be done. Like,
yeah, you know, I don't know if they could even take me down now though, because my wrestling's obviously
okay. Good, you know? Yeah, that's cool, man.
So do you think it was COVID really that was the catalyst for you to go from, you know, giving it a bit of a crack in the amateur level to being actually, I'm going to put all my eggs in this basket and have a run at, you know, and kind of got you to where you are now?
So it was actually COVID that made me switch from being a jiu-jitsu competitor that wanted to win medals at majors like Europeans, Worlds, Pan Ams. Because I was like solely a jiu-jitsu competitor before COVID. And then during COVID, I couldn't train jiu-jitsu. And my first Muay Thai gym that I trained in for that couple of months was still doing little secret trainings, and I knew the lads. So I just got onto them and I said, let me do a bit Muay Thai while I can't do jiu-jitsu anyway and do something, you know, so just keep the head fresh. And, you know, did it pretty consistently then over COVID and got to a stage where I was like, right, I'm keeping it well on the feet with guys that are, like you say, these guys from Bellator and Cage Warriors that were coming into the gym that were established MMA fighters, and I was having it on the feet with them. And then I was like, well, my jiu-jitsu is definitely better than theirs, and I'm even with them on the feet, so why can't I go into this? And then towards the end of COVID, I made my amateur debut. So yeah, it was actually an outdoor event, Cage Conflict at the Fela in 2021.
Right.
Nice, man. Yeah, but I was going to say, this is like, not surprises me, but you say obviously the goal was to win medals in jiu-jitsu and Europeans and stuff. Like, I watched some of your amateur fights and your two pro fights before you were on the show, and your style now seems very, like, you know, if I didn't know or hadn't had this chat with you, I'd have thought maybe you were a striker first that then found some jiu-jitsu, because you're very, you know, you're good on your feet, you're rangy, you seem happy to keep it on the feet. So is that something that you just fell in love with, or you found it worked well? Was it a conscious shift or just something that happened?
Yeah, so with the jiu-jitsu, it's sort of like my jiu-jitsu is sort of a hand grenade, or like a hidden knife, you know. It's something I keep in my back pocket. I found that, like, with my range, I'm quite tall for a lightweight. I've got a lot of range as a lightweight. I've got, like, the same reach as Anderson Silva, who was a middleweight, you know. Yeah. So I just found with the striking, I just got quite adept to it, and I'm not really a fan of crotch sniffing, so I'm not really one of these guys that's going to start shooting and holding on to people and that. Like, I don't think that's really a fight, and that's not what the fans want to see either. Like, you know, it's not only about chatting shit. I think it's about getting in there into the cage and actually having an entertaining fight and making people go, oh, you know what I mean? Like, when people don't really do that when you're holding on to someone or trying to scramble onto their back.
Yeah.
Well, so now...
I was going to say, that's fair, because, like, yeah, from what I saw, it was like you when you did use your jiu-jitsu in some of your other matches, it was either like someone had taken you down or they'd gone down and you followed them down. It wasn't, kind of like you say, it's like you've got it if you need it, but you're not gonna go into the fight with 100%. Getting to the ground as a goal.
100%. That's the style, is like, you know, keep someone at range, ping them up, force them to shoot, and then when they shoot, and they realize, oh shit, like this guy knows jiu-jitsu. It forces them to either stand up or they get caught in something or swept and I get on top. And there's, you know, there's no secret there. You know, I mean, anyone that's watched any of my fights will see that. I have four submissions, one at pro and three at amateur. Yeah. And like you say, they're all involved of me piecing someone up on the feet, them engaging in the grappling, and then getting caught.
They're getting desperate and shooting, and you're actually, well, I'm at home on the ground.
Yeah,
that's it, you know. And I mean, I so far, I've never even been put in a submission in 12, 14 fights. So,
what are your nerves like when you're going out fighting compared to, we'll say, like your Muay Thai fights and that? Was the nerves more in the professional as opposed to the amateur?
Because quite a few of the lads we've chatted to have said that after they've done a MMA fight, they've never felt like nervous or any nerves like in a jiu-jitsu competition ever again, because it's like night and day. But
definitely the consequences are way more dire in MMA. I used to get nerves competing in jiu-jitsu, but again, I feel like a lot of those nerves are because, oh, I've paid 80 quid to be here, I don't want to lose the first match, you know. I want to at least get a medal for that, like. Whereas now it's like, yeah, I could actually get really hurt here. I've done one grappling, I wouldn't say competition, it was like a super fight, since I've done MMA, and I felt no nerves for it whatsoever. It was like going to an open mat in a new gym. Everyone gets nervous, you know. I get nervous for an MMA fight. But I feel like I handled the nerves well. The only fight I wasn't nervous for was actually my pro debut. And I feel like I didn't really push the action much. I feel like I need those nerves a little bit to give you that adrenaline rush.
You're a little bit too comfortable.
Yeah, you know, you need that bit of a kick in the hole.
Yeah.
But yeah, as I say, I use the nerves as much as I can. And I feel like when it comes to the crowd, like I feel like I play to the crowd a little bit.
You definitely do.
In front of crowds. Yeah, you know, I'm used to being in front of crowds, so like the crowd doesn't really faze me too much. And once they're in the cage, lights come on and the referee says fight, you're just like in fight mode then, you know?
Yeah, it's just blinkers on, you don't see anything else. Like, I mean, we'll just bring it around. I mean, I think you said like you don't respect anybody till you fight him. And I think it was clear to see after the fight with Hassan, you did show him a lot of respect afterwards, you know, and it was, you know, it looked genuine, like, and it was just, it was just one question I had. I don't know how much time you have, but do you need to hate someone? Do you need to find that fire or to, not that you hated him, but, you know, do you need to find that fire, that thing to pick at, to get yourself up to go and fight these guys? Because I don't think you're naturally, like you say, you're just having banter with him, really. And it kind of, it shifted, like, I was watching it, because I think it was Irish Fighters TV. I actually commented under one of your posts, and that's how I got into talking to you. And I was just like, you were like, oh yeah, blah, blah, blah. But it was just the kind of heel look. But then you could see on the TV show, like, the flip, how you were respectful to him afterwards, you know, and you're like, no, we've fought now, I respect you, you know, and...
Yeah, I respect anyone once they've shared time in the cage with me. I feel like it's a very visceral experience between two people to be locked in the cage with each other, trying to hurt each other. No matter what way it goes, you gain a certain level of respect for someone, you know. Obviously, that respect has to be earned. I show no one any respect until they've stepped in the cage with me, if they're someone that I could be fighting. Because I feel like if you go in there respecting someone too much, it can affect your performance. I don't need to hate anyone. I've never hated any of my opponents.
Yeah, sorry, hate was probably the wrong word.
Yeah, I mean, like, I more so want them to hate me, you know. I would prefer if they hate me, because it makes them emotional, it gets them stiffer, and they might not, you know, think properly. You do have to think in there.
Yeah, it's a good extent. Tactic, yeah.
And you don't think when you're emotional, so I don't really have any emotions towards anyone when I fight them. They're just a silhouette. They're just a person in front of me, a person, just a torso, two legs, two arms, a neck and a head, and targets, you know. So very much like soldiers train not to see, you know, the opposition as humans, but as targets. Like, that's all that person is just a target.
Okay. Is there anything else you want to finish on or anything? I mean, this episode 6 is probably going to be out when this comes, but episode 5, you were taking shots at the coach, Team England coach Akon, saying you were calling him out you're trying to guarantee the next fight in your contract, maybe.
Yeah, Akon doesn't want it with me, mate.
He doesn't want the smoke, no?
Nah, he doesn't want it with me. He knows that I have way too much ammunition on him. If you give him a quick Google search, you'll find enough of it. That's all I'm gonna say. About
leave that nugget for the listeners to delve a bit deeper on. But yeah, no man, I really appreciate you coming on, bro. Is there anything you want to plug before you get off? We'll obviously put all your socials and stuff in the show bio so people can follow along. Like I say, anyone who's not watching, available on Channel 4. Episode 6 will be out by the time this airs.
Yeah.
So.
It's on YouTube as well. Yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, obviously give the show a watch if you haven't watched it already. If you have been watching it, keep watching it. Next episode is going to be a banger. I know it was a bit of a slow one yesterday, but
it's cliffhanger. Ended on a cliffhanger.
The fights are back on next week. Yeah, obviously shout out to all my sponsors. You can find them on the various posts I have on my Instagram. You know, without them, I wouldn't really be able to do this full time. Shout out to all my coaches, all my training partners, shout out to Team Ireland for being a sick pack of animals over there, and you know, shout out to Brad Pickett for being my number one hater.
I love that, man. Yeah, no, thanks a mil for coming on, brother, especially this late in the day and after training. Like I said, once you've won it, I'd love you to come back on and we'll have a bit more of a chat with you about what's after and what's next, but yeah,
cheers, mate. Yeah, it's good. No, I was just happy to have you on, man. Thank you,
lads, for having me on as well. I appreciate it, yeah.
No. Yeah, no hassle, man.
Anytime, brother. Take care.
Take it easy.
Nice one, lad.
Cheers, man.
Cheers.
Well, if that's not going to get you to watch the show, I don't know what will, especially like his episode, but like the build-up is brilliant. And since then, spoiler,
Yeah, if you don't want spoilers, pause now, go watch the most recent episode. But
yeah,
right, go on.
Give him a chance. He's actually in the semi-final. Or sorry, he's in the final. He won the semi-final, and like it was a three-round. I wouldn't call it a war, but like I can't think of your man's second name, but his first name is Bo, and he just kept coming forward.
Yeah,
and
it was just relentless pressure, wasn't it?
Oh man!
Like, but
and Dennis just kept picking in shots, picking his
shots, using that long rangey style. But yeah, no, it was good scrap, good to watch. Definitely, probably the ones I've watched, one of my favourite fights of the show so far. So,
definitely, yeah.
So double safe of him to come on, like with knowing that he's, because he knows he's in the final, right? He knew what the outcome was before we were recording that, so he knows he's in the final. He's probably getting a, you know. It's nice for him to come and see the little guys, and
yeah, I really appreciate the fuck out of him, and like I respect that like big time. Like he's won a fucking little place in my heart. Like,
yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So go on, Team Ireland, anyway.
Good cheering from you're at the final, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm going to watch it. It's on November 4th. Yeah, so if any of the fighters are listening and there's a fucking party going on afterwards, let me know.
Yeah, invite Irish Mike. He's wild. So yeah, we might have a few more of the cast on.
So we're in talks, but I won't say with who in case it falls through, because they have a very busy schedule and a lot of guys are open to coming on. But we'll see how it goes. Yeah, because they're preparing, they're getting into fight. They're in the camp. It's fight week.
Yeah, so even the guys that have been eliminated from the show, they're all on that card at the end, aren't they?
Well, they'll all be training together anyway.
Okay. I thought there was.
So some of them have been picked. So two of the guys have been announced.
That's it. Yeah, not all of them. But
yeah. So Hassan and Aaron have been. Their fight has been put on, and I think there's another one in the works or something like that. But so get watching that. Channel 4, Dazin, YouTube. It's fucking
it's Octagon MMA. It's harder to not find it than it is to find it, for fuck's sake.
There is another episode as well. If you like, follow Paul the Joker on social media. Like, he's the scouse fella that just abuses people in the crowd. He's fighting Jay Quickerton, who I haven't a fucking clue.
Are they sponsoring you, Mike?
No, but like, let's just give him the shout. Like, they were good enough to come on to us, and we're getting.
I wonder if Octagon are unofficially.
I'm not going to tell you, like, getting backhanders. I better delete them DMs on the Instagram before you worry them.
But yeah, as well as the cast of Octagon, Luke North's promised us a return visit to the podcast to talk about all things seminar related after.
Yeah, we're looking at Jimmy Wheeler as well.
That we've been promising to chat to for a while. Yeah, and I think diaries haven't married up. But yeah, I'm looking forward to that one as well. Another local up and coming competitor competing in those matches or super fights, call them what you will.
But that's it. So
shout out to Salt and Storm, X Marshall and Flow State. Links in the bio and discount codes if you are so inclined to purchase from X Marshall or Flow State.
Yeah,
you let them know where you found. Let them know where you found.
One of the lads in the gym is rocking X Marshall stuff that his people from work bought for us. So that's fairly sound, like.
Is it?
Yeah, there's been a couple of purchases on it, actually.
Fucking, it's starting
to happen.
Mike's.
I haven't collected the money, but like,
Mike's just keeping it all.
As Father said, Ted says, it's just resting there in my account.
Just keeping it all but, hidden away, eh?
Yeah. So, all right. Moving swiftly along.
There might not be another podcast, guys. Me and Mike are about to fall out.
We're going
to
fall out over the price of a coffee. But it's good. It's good to be back. I hope you enjoyed it. Obviously, next week there won't be an episode. It'll be every 2 weeks from now till Christmas. But we're going to try and fill you up with content. And if we do have an abundance of episodes, we might release like a bonus episode every now and again. And we'll try and get you some over Christmas when we're on holidays.
Yeah, that's it. So, but yeah, do all the good shit. Like, comment, like, subscribe, 5-star review, email us, and play it to your nan. Much love, everybody.
Cheers, guys.